Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Joining me is tonight's co-host, courtesy of the San Jose office of Berliner Cohen, Josh Borger, by now well known as a frequent guest on Your Legal Rights. Josh practices commercial and civil litigation in a variety of areas. Tonight marks 3 years since founding host Chuck Finney passed away. It seems wholly appropriate that tonight we take a look at a topic he found extraordinarily important, preventing and responding to financial elder abuse. To that end, our panel features expertise from civil, criminal, and even legislative perspectives.
What are some of the more common types of abuse? Where does one go for help if there's been financial abuse? Why is it so challenging to criminally prosecute these cases to a conviction? What kind of financial abuse cases do civil attorneys typically take? Perhaps most importantly, what can you do to protect mom or dad's assets? And what's the future of this body of consumer protection law?
As always, we are eager to hear what's on your mind and to answer your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're in the Bay Area, that is. And if you're outside of the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, our attorney guests cannot give you specific legal advice, as we don't have all the salient facts of your situation. And some of our guests who work for government or private entities express their own opinions, not necessarily that of the entities for whom they work. As always, we're happy to share the legal principles to help guide you in your decision-making. You can contact us with any question about the laws that protect elders from financial abuse. You are not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. With us tonight, from the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office, Deputy District Attorney Deshaun Mata is a veteran prosecutor currently assigned to prosecute felony elder abuse cases.
From Gilfix and LaPole Associates, Mark Gilfix practices in the areas of estate planning, elder law, and special needs plannings. Mark Gilfix co-authored the new book, Facing the Reality of Long-Term Care, with his father, Michael Gilfix, lending his expertise on multi-generational planning and technological advances in the field of aging.
And from the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, Prescott Cole is an expert in the field, helping people navigate the elder care system. He participates in legislation in this growing area of law with a focus on elder financial abuse, especially in the hands of serial commercial predators who target seniors. And with that, Prescott Cole, Mark Gilfix, Deshaun Mata, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You know, before I go further, I would like to begin by asking any one of you to simply lay out the issue very simply and succinctly. What is financial elder abuse?
Such a broad question. I'll give a quick thought and then I'll let Prescott continue. But it's really taking advantage of someone who's in a vulnerable position for financial gain. I mean, it's really using someone's weaknesses or lack of understanding or lack of capacity to steal from them in some way, shape, or form. And I'll kind of let you guys add to that.
Well said. Yeah, it's basically the wrongful taking of the property of an elder. And by the way, in California, we deal with elder abuse, and we also deal with it as dependent adult abuse. So when we talk about elder abuse, it's also abuse and neglect for people with disabilities who are classed as disabled individuals.
Deshaun, from a perspective of criminal prosecution, does the same definitions apply?
It's a little bit different. From a criminal perspective, there's a specific statute that talks about theft from an elder in California. It recognizes that elders are different when it comes to these types of crimes. And the statute is broad enough to encompass all kinds of theft of assets or property, including theft in its various forms, embezzlement, forgery, fraud, or even identity theft. For it to be classified as a felony here in California, the loss has to be greater than $950.
So we're talking about elders. Two questions for you. Who is an elder in California? And since a lot of the things that you were just mentioning are crimes regardless of your age, what makes it different, an elder abuse case versus just prosecuting someone for theft?
Well, for civil first, you need to know that the elder is somebody who's classed as 65 years of age or older. And then why have a special law? Right, if you steal money from anybody, you could have a civil case. However, if you steal from an elder, the wrongful taking of the property, then the state legislature has encouragement for civil attorneys to take up these cases by way of awarding attorney's fees and costs to the plaintiff's attorney, not to the defense attorney, but to the plaintiff's attorney. So therefore, you are encouraging the civil bar to come in to do some good work, to get back some property in the civil realm for an elder, and again, or dependent adult. Criminal's a little different.
So for example, just to follow up, there are going to be some people that are subject to elder abuse that may not be able to afford a lawyer, but they may find a lawyer because they can recover their attorney's fees.
Exactly. And if you think about it, too, some of these people have been their savings have been wiped out. They don't have money to pay hourly fees. And of course, you know, litigation is very expensive, and getting an attorney to work for nothing only happens on television. That there are pro bonos, but can't make too light of it. It's very difficult to find a civil attorney, especially if there's nothing to gain after you win. That's a big problem, because if the defendant has wasted all the money, given it away or spent it, or you can't find where it is, the civil litigator really cannot accomplish anything for the victim. So that's it's supposed to be encouraging the attorney to get attorney's fees and costs if you can identify the money. And there's a special provision in the civil law where a civil litigator can attach money or attach property before the case actually gets going, thereby making sure that there's something to get back to the victim after the case is over.
And one thing I would just to all these challenges, that's why it's so important to try to prevent it or head it off up front if you can. And you know, that's my side of the equation as a estate planning attorney, is trying to help families head it off, because as Prescott just said, it's so hard to get help once it's happened for so many families. There's a high bar. It's very challenging, but there are ways you can prevent it ahead of time.
Right. Back to, you know, the people that practice estate planning, it's very important that people with assets go to estate planning attorneys. I mean, you have insurance agents out there writing trust. You can download how to build your own living trust or something like that. You got to watch out for people. Sure, you have to pay the attorneys, but Mark can tell you about the outcomes with people that have botched trusts or wills that were made in the back of a paper napkin or something like that.
Wasn't that the story with Howard Hughes about the will in the paper napkin?
There are a lot of stories like that. And like Prince, the musician, passed away. He didn't even have a will. That was an absolute mess. It's amazing how many sophisticated, super wealthy people don't put any planning documents in place. So we'll go through some of those steps that you need to take to protect yourself and your family for that.
Well, Mark, if I can, to follow up on what you were saying, I agree with you. It's very important for everyone to have their trust and estates done. But if, for example, what do you do if son or daughter comes in and brings mom or dad and they want to be in the room with them, and you sense that maybe what happens is the person who wants to commit elder abuse, who wants them to get a bigger stake of it on the inheritance, brings them in. How do you deal with that situation?
Yeah, that's really hard, because we don't know the whole backstory. And I've literally had a case one time where mom came in with the daughter. All they could talk about was how bad the sons were and how they need to protect mom from the sons. Literally a week later, mom came in with the sons and they said the exact opposite thing. The daughter's the problem. She's horrible. And mom agreed both times. So the person who brings someone into the office often kind of controls the meeting. So what we always try to do is, of course, we have to meet one-on-one with the client. We have to ask questions. And this is what you as a family member, if you're concerned and you see some weird stuff happening maybe with another family member or caregiver, you really got to ask the questions. You know, do you understand what's happening here? Is anybody putting pressure on you to do this? Like, or is there anything you want to tell me just that we keep between the two of us? So it's hard. And if we see any, if it looks like it's dicey, if it looks like there's some manipulation, we just can't take the case. But then the problem is we know they might just go to another lawyer, and that lawyer might not see the warning signs, or might be a better day for mom or dad where they don't look like they're under pressure. It's a really hard problem. And that's why it's so important for family members who really care and have good intentions to keep an eye on mom or dad if they see issues, or someone who they care about. And it's not easy. It's very challenging.
So what are some of the more common forms of elder abuse?
Well, there's, you know, I'll just kick in really quick. It's you have the non-stranger financial elder abuse, and that's what Mark is dealing with. These are family members, next door neighbors, caregivers, somebody who knows the victim and preys upon the victim, but there's a relationship. Then there's the commercial serial predators. These are people that make their living. They have licenses. And that's very important to know, because you can go to the state if somebody has a license, and they'll have a mechanism for making complaints and bringing in the licensee. Extremely important, because a licensee wants to keep their license. And if, you know, they have to give back the money or make good, that's the best way, because you don't want to get involved with litigation unless you have to. But then there's the whole world that Dushan gets into, which is criminal.
Right. And maybe I can speak to that for a second. So first, Prescott, I know you defined an elder, and it's very similar in criminal law. It's someone that's 65 or older. What's the point of having a specific statute criminally? Well, there's a couple of things that come with having a specific statute. There's enhanced punishment should a person be found guilty and convicted. It appropriately labels the conduct going forward, so anyone doing a background check on that person realize that they stole from an elder and may not be an appropriate person in a caregiver role. There's also a method to record an elder's testimony in elder-specific cases. That does not happen in every theft case. We have trial priority. All these tools are important, because the types of theft that occur in the criminal arena oftentimes involve someone who is a known. In other words, someone who is either a relative, a grandchild, a son or daughter, or a caregiver. So it's important that we have those tools in place so that we can appropriately label the theft or the financial misappropriation.
Yeah, there's another world of financial abuse, and this is a world where nobody can do anything about this. And that's the internet thieves. These are the people that get a hold of a senior. See, these are, you know, different kinds of scams. There's somebody from a different country. There's a gold mine. There's whatever there is. But people are sending hundreds of thousands of dollars. Seniors are losing their money, and there's virtually no way to get any of that back. However, there is liability if you can find somebody that has a pocket. And in civil litigation, there's financial abuse, and there's also assisters of financial abuse. So anybody who assists in the wrongful taking, or if their negligence helps or aids a predator, then there could possibly be a pocket to go to. To go to get the assister. And there has been cases against banks that have allowed hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to different countries. There has been some cases where the banks have liability, even though they didn't commit the crime. Their negligence was to such a degree that they were held liable as assisting in the financial abuse.
I was reading an interesting story this weekend about, it was a case out of Florida where it was actually the grandson who went after the family fortune used it to get himself a job at a major brokerage. We won't discuss the name on air, but the lawsuit's going back and forth, and it seemed like an interesting weaving of the two worlds you described. You have the family member with a huge family fortune at stake who went there and started churning the family fortune for his own good. How common is that?
Almost always, the most common type of financial elder abuse is a family member. I mean, they're people who have constant access. And you talk about when someone has diminished capacity, you talk about undue influence. That's one of the legal terms we use. If there's fraud, it's, are you using a place of power over someone to get them to do something they wouldn't have done otherwise, in plain English? And so we often see family members, and certainly in higher net worth families, sometimes there's so much money sloshing around, no one really keeps an eye on it. So often it's a family member. Caregivers are another category where there's been a long history of financial abuse. You know, a caregiver comes in, is with mom or dad 24 hours a day, literally, and they get to know them. And sometimes it's not nefarious. Sometimes they really are good people, and mom or dad wants to take care of them in some way. But when you see big changes in financial behavior, often it is someone who is already part of the family, who already has a role, who might have otherwise inherited money regardless, but they want more, and they convince mom or dad to do more than they would have otherwise. So we see that all the time. And as attorneys or even third parties, it's often very difficult to find out who the bad guy is unless you see a major change in someone's estate plan. So you know, again, for family members watching for those red flags, or someone who's kind of on the outside looking, is there all of a sudden a big change in someone's financial situation? Is someone around your loved one all of a sudden come into a lot of money that you didn't know about? But it's a big challenge, and it often is family members. Absolutely.
Right. But by far the biggest numbers of financially abused elders come from the non-stranger. However, the biggest money that's lost is by these professional predators.
Sure.
Because, you know, I heard like one litigator was talking about, you know, some of these non-stranger financial abuse people, you know, they just don't have as much talent as the commercial predators. I mean, they just aren't good enough to rip off more people, so they just keep it very local.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we have an all-star cast, and we're taking a look at financial elder abuse. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic or any question relating to elder financial abuse. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation.
You know, Mark had mentioned undue influence, which is a tool the civil litigators can use, but that's not available to the criminal prosecutor. So the reason you can't is because there's no statute for criminal undue influence. However, and hats off to San Mateo for trying it out. There's a case several years ago called People v. Brock, where they had a conviction, great case, but the statute just wasn't there for them. And then if anybody really wants to get involved with legislation, that's something to do, you know, get the legislators to step up and really look at what needs to be done in the criminal realm.
So what are the warning signs people should be on the lookout for that they have a parent or someone else they're close to that's an elder that may be subject to abuse?
Yeah, I think the hard part is you don't always have a window into their finances, but if you do, and you don't always have to see their financial statements, but if you see bills piling up, you know, physically, visual check of someone's house or apartment, are bills piling up? Is there evidence that they're paying bills multiple times, the same bills? If you do get access to financial accounts, you can see that. And by the way, that's an important prevention tool. Talking to mom and dad about getting power of attorney, getting them to voluntarily empower you to help them with their finances, that's critical. Or even just getting voluntary access to their financial accounts. Maybe it's just online access, just getting mom or dad to give you their login information to view their checking. But if you see things being paid twice, suspicious transfers of money, mom or dad forgetting what they did, you know, memory issues can directly affect financial behavior. So if you see that mom or dad is having severe memory issues, maybe you don't see money issues yet, but you know they're coming up. And they're not going to be managing their finances well. Certainly, if you see tax bills unpaid, anything, any changes in their normal financial patterns, whatever that is, even small ones, because for everything you see, there's probably 10 things you don't see. So if you see any little warning signs, again, bills paid twice, bills not paid, suspicious transfers, that's probably the tip of the iceberg, but certainly that's time to talk to mom or dad about it and to dig into it more. Or if it's just someone who's not a family member, to try to talk to them about it and help them to explore what's going on, because most of this never gets uncovered.
Right. And, you know, we as a society have to really start to appreciate what elderly, what aging is all about. There's a lot of good brain science that's coming out, aging brain science, and there's a couple of really wonderful studies out there. One from, it's called Boston College. What they do is they can actually measure somebody's financial competency and their confidence level. And so after the age of 50, wherever you are on the graph, you lose a point in competence every year. However, they measure your confidence level, that stays about the same. So you can show an elder, you know, you're losing your ability to understand what you're doing. And they say, yeah, yeah, but I know what I'm doing. That's one study out there. And another one deals with the aging brain and showing that with the brain, the orbital cortex, which is actually, it's the last part of the brain to develop. That's why you don't charge children as adult criminals. That's where you do your executory function. That's where you conform intent, you know. But at the age of 23, it's at its peak. And at the age of about 60, it starts to lose its dominance. And this one study showed that 35-40% of seniors that otherwise have no indications or there's no sign that they have any kind of capacity issues, 35-40% are actually making decisions the same way people with traumatic brain injury make decisions. It's just they're making emotional decisions. And so they are getting wiped out. They're brought into these different things, like just mentioned, reverse mortgages, which are pursued because it looks like free money, and they're not understanding it's a very complicated loan. And this is where we have to appreciate what is aging, you know? And so if you're looking at dad and dad's 85, you go, wow, he's sure sharp. He's 85. If they have mom's 90, mom is 90, and you have to step in there. The banks do have something that you could work with the bank, and they can let you know. A third party can be given information if there's if there's activity there that you should know about. Mark mentioned just, you know, giving the kids access to the you know, to the accounts. I wouldn't recommend that, because for every four kids, there's one of them in there that can probably be doing a little self-help. But you've got to get transparency, and we have to appreciate elders are aging. It's a wonderful thing, but they're vulnerable.
Well, let's follow up for a second on something we were talking about before we went on the air related to this. Sometimes mom or dad can be subject to elder abuse, but they don't see it or they don't want to see it. They want to side with the person who's committing the abuse. Maybe it's one of their children, and they don't want to believe that one of their children would do that. So what do you do in that setting when the one who's committing the elder abuse has the person who's the elder abuse is being committed upon siding with them?
That's really, really challenging, of course. And that's where sometimes you have to go down the court route. You know, my side of practice, trying to prevent it up front, that means everybody more or less in the family has to cooperate, mainly mom or dad. So if mom or dad comes to see me to put planning documents into place to empower loved ones to help them, well, they are my client. I have to listen to them. And if we see something weird going on, or if it looks like exactly that someone's manipulating them, I'm kind of out of the picture. I can't do much. And that's when you have to take other steps. And I'll let you guys kind of talk about those follow-ups, conservatorships or going to get help from the DA. You guys can talk about some of those issues.
Yeah. So Deshaun, how easy is it to do a case when the victim is not going to cooperate to put Sonny Boy in jail?
Deshaun had to step away for just a moment. He will be back. But I can tell you from representing people on those cases, it can be challenging when you have to get in front of a jury and your complaining witness is anything but complaining, and you've got to explain to the jury that, and this I'm speaking as a prosecutor, I actually defend the cases, so my perspective is a little different, but for a prosecutor to have to step in front of the jury and explain that sometimes we have to do things to protect people despite their instincts that are going the other way. And it can at times be a tough sell.
From the civil side, under the civil statute, it's very clear who has the right to sue for elder abuse. And it is, if the person is still living, it is the elder who has the sole right to sue in their name unless they've been conserved. So in this setting, it's very difficult because if they're subject to elder abuse, but they haven't been conserved, which is done by a court, then nobody's going to sue. And frankly, nobody has the right to sue. You would have to do an involuntary conservatorship of that person. And then the person who's appointed to be the conservator has the right to sue. But that's not easy. Would you go agree?
And another thing is, which is great. I mean, we're an aging population. That's wonderful because in 1901, the longevity was 47 years of age. And that's, you know, that's what you had. But now, of course, people are living longer. But with that comes kinds of different situations, such as blended families, second marriages. And then you get into the estate planning realm, where you have, you know, the kids of the biological kids in the second, the third marriage. And then if you have to do some estate planning, for instance, you have to go into Medi-Cal, which I know the Gilfix organization does a lot of Medi-Cal planning. What do you do when the kids bring in mom, dad has to go to the nursing home, and then want to transfer all the assets to, it's not mom, it's the second or third wife. And what do you do in a situation like that?
Yeah, and those are different shades of potential financial elder abuse. And we're looking, especially when we're looking at financial like transfers. And again, I keep hammering, you know, preparing ahead of time. Because if mom and dad, if, whether it's an adult kid that brings them in to create that power of attorney, in that trust or will, you know, to say, this is where I want my assets to go. Well, if they're acting in a way that's consistent with the documents they created a few years before, we're not so stressed about it because maybe now they're stressed. Maybe they have health issues. Maybe they have limited capacity. But when they had a clear head, when they were in better health before, they created this power of attorney that empowered the same person that's coming in with them today. So, hey, 5 years ago, we know you trusted them. We're not as worried about them coming in the last minute, changing things. If you already pre-authorized certain transfers or you're already leaving money to this person, we're less worried about it. But that really goes back to, you know, if you're already facing worries about financial elder abuse, your options are a bit more limited. But for those out there who are worried about it in the future, that's why it's so important to get stuff on record and creating the same documents that empower your loved ones, a power of attorney, which lets someone step in to help you with day-to-day finances, paying your bills, talking to the bank, getting that in place, naming someone you trust. If you're the adult child, getting mom or dad to do that. When you have that, if issues come up in the future, then we have sort of a document of record showing what mom and dad wanted when they were clear-headed. And because often if estate planning documents are challenged, like let's say all of a sudden, because there's a form of elder abuse, if dad changes his trust or his will to all of a sudden leave most of his estate to a new person. Well, if someone challenges that, what happens? Well, you go back to the previous document that was done before. So the point is it's critical to start thinking about this if you can, before you're facing these major issues, because then you have, again, documents on record that show what mom and dad wanted ahead of time. And we're doing Medi-Cal planning. If it makes sense for mom or dad maybe to transfer some of their assets, we always look at the record of documents. Like, is this consistent with the pattern of their planning before? If it's a big change, that's a big red flag for us. So it's all about looking for patterns and ideally establishing a core plan where mom or dad empowers, or the loved one empowers, people that they trust over the long term. And if there's a long record of continually naming the same people, that's really helpful. If a third party attorney comes in and sees something weird, they can see this record over 20 years. It was the same son who was named as trustee. All of a sudden now it's this new friend who just came into his life. So, you know, planning ahead is just so, so important.
Right. And so on the, that's with the non-strangers, with the situation with the, again, professional, the commercial serial predator, the civil litigator is going to look not only to the person that took the money, but to everybody else who's engaged in that business. It's sort of like looking at a conspiracy of sorts. But if you look at a product like an annuity, for instance, there's the agent, there's the broker, and there's the insurance company. And California is way ahead of most states when it comes to protecting consumers with laws that we'll just talk about insurance for a little bit. The annuity, there are some great law, and it's actually called senior insurance in the insurance code. And it prohibits insurance agents from selling unsuitable annuities. Doesn't mean they're not going to do it, but it means when they do sell an unsuitable annuity to somebody who's over the age of 65, an example would be somebody who's 83 years of age and buys a deferred annuity that doesn't mature for 30 years, they got two chances of getting value out of that, zero and none. And if they cancel the annuity out, they're going to have a surrender penalty. But you know, that is a great lawsuit that a civil litigator will take to go all the way to the insurance company because there's a suitability requirement.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Your Legal Rights here on KALW San Francisco at 91.7 FM. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's law referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org. Once again, that phone number is 415-989-1616. Website sfbar.org. And at 7 o'clock, we'll have Q from the CBC. Keep it close. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we take a detour from the nuts and bolts and take a look at some of what lawyers are doing to make California a better place. One segment will be devoted to lawyers volunteering for committees devoted to professional equality or social justice. Then we move on and have a discussion of the Conference of California Bar Associations, a nonprofit that serves justice in California by bringing together attorney volunteers from around the state to seek, debate, and promote creative, nonpartisan changes to the law for the benefit of Californians. Join us for an open discussion as we bring you lawyers and social change. Tonight, we have an all-star cast, and we're taking a look at financial elder abuse. If you have a question for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic or any question relating to elder financial abuse. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation. So before we left, we were talking about some of the warning signs, some of the things that send up red flags, some of the things we could do ahead of time to prevent those things from occurring. Let's fast forward a little bit. We're at a point now where you see some of those warning signs. There's red flags amiss. What steps should you take when you see these signs?
I'll just jump in for a second here. Depends on where you are in the warning sign stage. If a large amount of money's already disappeared, that goes to, you know, Deshaun's office, potentially the prosecutor. If you start to see the beginnings of it, it may still be salvageable without having to go to a third party, especially, as Prescott said, if it's a stranger doing it. You know, that's where the family can rally around to protect mom or dad. And that's where it's critical for adult children to be communicating with mom and dad. And sometimes you can head it off without having to get law enforcement or conservatorship or getting the authorities involved. And that's kind of the best case scenario, right? Because our authorities are overwhelmed, you know, getting time in court can take years. So if it's a stranger stealing from mom and dad, and you suspect that, talk to mom and dad, question them about it, see what's going on and dig in and see if you can just head it off without having to get third parties involved. But let's say that, you know, you kind of pass that and already a bunch of money's gone. That's where, you know, Deshaun and Prescott, you can weigh in.
Right. Well, if you suspect that something's going on, if you have an elder you're concerned about, you think they might be isolated, you think there might be something going on in the home, you think there might be a bad caregiver there, you would want to contact Adult Protective Services. And what they do is they would go out to do a to try to do a wellness check to see if there's a problem. Now, they're mandated reporters to law enforcement if they know or if they suspect that there's abuse, and that can get the ball rolling. Everybody has a right to make a good faith call to an APS if they suspect that there's something that's going on. And that's one avenue that should be taken. Knowing, though, that APS is not like Child Protective Services. They don't actually have their own police power. They're mandated reporters. They're trained. They know what they're looking at. California has a very good adult protective service system.
One of the other agencies I've looked to when I've had similar situations is the Ombudsman Program, which will actually send somebody out and talk to the person and really flesh out what their desires really are.
Yeah, the Ombudsman actually are mostly for the people in facilities, whether they're nursing homes or assisted living facilities. But the law enforcement has, you have the victim's advocates. Deshaun, do you work with them?
Right. So we've been talking a lot about sort of the justice partners in when it comes to combating elder abuse. And we've mentioned Adult Protective Services, which are part of our team, victim advocates who work with me very closely. I have a specific assigned victim advocate who is trained to work with elders and has specialized knowledge when it comes to these types of cases. Included in that team is the public guardian's office when conservatorship is needed, medical staff, whether that be a hospital social worker, a geriatrician, neuropsychologists, all these individuals play an important role in helping prevent these sort of scams and situations from happening.
Let me turn it over to Ariana in Oakland. Ariana, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I have a complicated question, so I'm trying to think how to simplify it in my mind, but so my mother was in her 90s when she tried to change her trust, and it was actually to give me more than I was going to get. And she met with her attorney, and the attorney was going to do it, but she said, well, all the beneficiaries have to agree to this, which is kind of, I think, kind of odd in itself, because giving me more would have meant less for somebody else. And then my brother objected, and he basically threatened the attorney with, I think, like malpractice, or, you know, he threatened her. And so she backed down and refused to do it. So my question is, I mean, I understand it's, you know, complicated, and obviously a lot of elders, you know, there is real abuse. But on the other hand, you know, they do have the right to change things that they want in their trust. And, you know, it's sort of taking away their power to deny them that right. My mother was upset that she, you know, couldn't give me more. So I'm just kind of curious to hear your panel weigh in on, you know, elder rights in the sense of getting to still control their money, you know, as long as they're capable.
Ariana, before my panel answers, let me throw in another wrinkle that you brought out that I want to flesh out also. And I see Mark's ready to answer, but let me add from the beginning, shouldn't that attorney have recognized their primary duty is not to all the beneficiaries, but rather to the person who's currently holding the money and what they want to do?
Yeah, I think that too. That's why I felt like it was very unusual what she did.
Yeah, so I can just weigh in here. As this is what I do day in, day out. And at the end of the day, it's what your mom wants. She has capacity, and if she's clear and she recognizes what's going on, your attorney, her attorney's job, to be clear, her attorney, not your attorney, her attorney's job is to do what she says. Now, if she told her attorney, I'm only going to do this if all my beneficiaries agree. Okay, well, the attorney's job just kind of changed and they have to listen to what the beneficiary said because that's what mom told them. So what I'm hearing here from you, Ariane, is that maybe it's kind of in between here because you're saying your mom sounds frustrated that she can't do it. The reality is she can call your attorney tomorrow. It doesn't matter what your brother says. If she says, you know what, it doesn't, I want it. I'm no longer worried about what my beneficiaries want. This is what I want to do. And she absolutely has a right to do that as long as she understands it and has capacity. So she has rights. I mean, there are a lot of laws that protect her ability to make decisions. So,
you know, I'll just say, but Mark's, you know,
touching on is like the societal view of all this anyway. Is it protection? Are we being patronistic or patronizing the elder and trying to say what's best for them? Or we're trying to protect them? I mean, there's a struggle here. And Mark's right. I mean, if the person has capacity, there's no undue influence. That's one thing. But if there's a gray zone in there, or if the attorney is not really sure, then the attorney really can't go ahead and just say, because mom looks like she's having a good day and what's really going on here. That's not to say your particular thing. We're just talking generally.
Yeah, I think the whole issue of capacity is complicated. Like people generally, like you guys do, to say, does she or doesn't she? But anybody who works in the field knows it's really a gray area. Like, yeah. You know, at the time of this happening, my mother was very forgetful. You know, she wouldn't remember what you said 5 minutes
ago.
That's
a pretty big warning.
Well, it's, I don't know, I know, I mean, aren't you forgetting already? I mean, I know that I'm, you know, I'm not that old and I'm forgetful. So I think it is, it's kind of, is a gray area. And like, even if you're forgetting, does that mean you still don't get to, I mean, I've heard lawyers say that doesn't mean that any doctor, that doesn't mean you
honestly,
get to say.
Somebody, I don't want to be argumentative, but if somebody really is showing signs of short-term memory loss, and wants to start in their 90s, and they want to start changing their estate plan, to be on the safe side, so nobody comes back and says financial elder abuse, you would want to get a geriatrician in there. You would want to get a real capacity test going to make sure that what the elder is asking for is something that is really, I don't know how else to put it, the right thing.
Uh-huh. But it is, you know, it's a tough area, but at the same time, we don't want to take away people's ability to make decisions the moment they start to lose their memory, you know, so it's a tough area and it's very fact specific, but we'd have to know more about this situation.
Yeah. And the back and forth there's, if you're like one of four or five or six kids, everybody's going to have, everybody's going to have a say in there. You always want to protect yourself against accusations of financial elder abuse. So do what you can to make sure that doesn't come up. I'm not talking about your individual thing. This is all very general because that's what we're here to do.
Uh-huh. From what we said, Ariana, it's hard to distinguish between a situation where the attorney is protecting themselves, perhaps, as opposed to an attorney that's not sure that your mother had the capacity at that point in time, or perhaps the property that was being considered may have been in some kind of a trust or other structure that wouldn't let her go back and change it. And it's very difficult from where we sit here to know that. But sitting down with an attorney that can review the entirety, all the documents, sit down with your mother, maybe have her evaluated, may give you a better answer.
Well, it's too late now. But the other thing is that my brother's a bully and he is threatening. And so I think I wasn't on the conversation, but I think that he threatened the attorney and she backed down, I think is what happened. Anyway, it's too late now. But
sorry you had to deal with that, Ariana.
I was just curious. Okay, thank you.
All righty. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And that does bring up a question that somebody asked me before we went on the air tonight and was hoping to call in and relate this, and I'll do it on his behalf. I'm going to ask separately in the civil and criminal arenas, but what can you do when, whether it's elder financial abuse or perhaps the kind of bullying that Ariana described, isn't flushed out until after the testator passes? How can you respond to that? And what can you do to try to get the information and create a case that you can work with.
That is a challenge. Let you guys who deal with that.
I mean, you're going to have a lot of information, a lot of evidence that there was a wrongdoing before you can disinherit somebody.
Challenging something after you, it's a pretty high burden.
The best thing is to go where Mark's at with the estate planning. You know, get everything buttoned up at the very beginning. You know, look, everybody over the age of 18, for instance, is responsible for making their own decisions. You can get a durable power of attorney for healthcare, for property, just by going online, downloading it. You get a statutory DPA for healthcare, statutory DPA for property. People don't do that. People don't plan. And that leads to, you know, not only a disaster for them when they lose capacity, but it makes it really, if you don't even have a simple will going, then the state will give you one. And what a mess that's going to end up in probate and on it goes. People need to be responsible, know that they're aging, and make the plans for taking care of themselves to protect not only themselves, but to protect their loved ones so they don't have to go through a mess.
Deshaun, when you see signs where somebody's either changed gears or they've made their wants really clear and they weren't allowed to change gears, how hard is it for you to work with after the person's passed before some of this stuff gets fleshed out?
You know, that's a difficult question because it really depends on the individual case and the evidence before me. But I will say I don't want to discourage people who are listening to not report these incidents to law enforcement just because the victim has passed away or is deceased. Because, for example, if there is clear evidence that before the victim passed away, the elder passed away, that they did not have capacity. In other words, they could not consent to their money being taken from them. Then I can still bring a criminal case. And so it really depends on the situation.
Well, we've been talking a lot about what happens after you've been subject to elder abuse. And Mark, I know this is your specialty. What are the documents that you want to have in place when you still have capacity to give you the best chance of not being subject to elder abuse?
Yeah, and it's a cliche, but an ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure here. So the three core documents, Prescott mentioned some of these, durable power of attorney for finances. That governs your day-to-day finances. If you're incapacitated, you can make it springing, meaning if I am incapacitated, if my doctor says I can't manage my finances, then this person I trust can step in. Or sometimes clients who already recognize, and this is a big issue, if mom or dad or someone you care about, if they can recognize I'm starting to slip, get those documents in place. And we have a lot of clients who will name someone right away. They don't need to show that they're incapacitated. Like, I'm giving my son the power to sign for me right now. So durable power of attorney for finances, an advanced healthcare directive for medical decisions. If you're in the hospital, can't make decisions for yourself, who do you want to name to make medical decisions for you, communicate with your doctors on your behalf? And then depending on the size of your estate, really, if you have a house or any property, you need a revocable living trust. And if you don't have that much, you can just do a will if you have under about $150,000. But either way, those are critical. A trust lets you name backup trustees. So that's not just about after you pass away. These are people who can step in while you're still around to help manage your big assets. So the trust and the power of attorney kind of work together to let you name the people that you trust to step in to deal with your finances if you have issues while you're still around. And the trust or a will also shows your intent for where you want your assets to go. And that's often very useful when you suspect abuse. Is it going to someone who's already going to inherit anyway? Well, a gift to a person who's already going to inherit your estate anyway is probably not as suspicious as a big gift or some transfer to someone who's not named in those documents or big changes late in life. So, you know, you can download some of these forms, especially if you have real assets, especially if there are any issues or challenging family dynamics. It's really important to work with an attorney because then you have a third party witness to this. You know, you can do your own documents online, sure, and they might be valid. But if they're ever challenged, if there's ever issues, there is no one who can go to bat to say that you had capacity when you did it, that you understood it. So really working with an attorney or, you know, a legal aid society or program like SALA, Senior Adults Legal Assistance, in Santa Clara County. My father started that in 1973. There are free legal aid programs that can help with that. But trust or will, power of attorney, advance directive, get them done ahead of time. If you're worried about your own memory, do it right away. You know, if you suspect these issues for yourself, family members, get mom and dad to do that right away. If you can get these in place, it heads off so many of these issues. You have a clear line of succession. You've made your wishes known. You've identified the people that you trust, and it helps in so many ways to head off these issues before they start.
Yeah, I completely agree with Mark. And I mentioned the online statutory durable powers only as triage. You know, get that done, get it done today, then go to a lawyer to really get the thing nailed down. But if you don't have any documents at all, you're just naked running down the freeway, you know, and the proverbial car hits you. What a mess, you know. So start to think about it. And not only that, tell your friends, have a little party, download all these little statutory DPAs, and you fill them out. And what you need to do for health care is simply fill it out. You don't sign it. You have two witnesses there. They watch you sign it, and then boom, there you go. You're good to go. That cost you nothing except maybe a donut, some coffee. The durable power of attorney statutory form, a little more complicated. You print it out, and you don't sign it till you get a notary. But that's all you need to do. That's like triage. Take care of that. Then go to an attorney to really work out what your estate is.
Thank you for the highway analogy, Prescott. That'll stay with me all night.
Do you like it or not?
With that much said, I'd like to give each of you a couple of minutes. We're really at the end of the hour, and we have but a couple minutes for each of you for anything you would like to add, any closing thoughts. Who would like to go first? Deshaun, I just saw a light come on. It's not a halo over your head, but at least it's a light that tells me that maybe you want to jump in.
Sure. And thank you again for having me to add my perspective to this conversation on this incredibly important issue. You know, one thing I want to do is frame the scope of the problem. Estimates have financial loss for elder abuse to be as much as $3 billion annually, $3 billion with a B. And that number may actually be a vast underestimate of the actual loss that elders are seeing in our community. For every one case that's reported to me, there are likely 24 cases that are going undetected. And so the most heartbreaking thing that I hear from victims directly is when there is self-blame, when they say, this happened because of actions that I took, and they take responsibility for falling victim to a scam. And I say back to them, there was absolutely nothing that they could do in this situation. They were targeted. They were sought out. And for example, we were talking about these stranger scams, and the best way to prevent them is education. And so I hope that if nothing else, our listeners take away from this particular broadcast that this is incredibly commonplace, and no one person should feel embarrassed that this happened to them. Feel free to talk with your loved ones, with law enforcement, to make sure that we continue to track these crimes.
Mark, can I jump in next?
Sure, well said. Yeah, and I saw the statistics at $3 billion up to $30 billion per year or more. I mean, it's so underreported, and a lot of this never gets uncovered. So financial elder abuse is such a hard problem, and our population's aging. It's only going to get bigger, this issue. So I think if you are, you know, the adult child and you see these issues with your parents, talk to them, get involved, make sure that the people around them see that you're involved. There's so much that you can do to help them, help them to get these documents into place. As Prescott said, you can do very simple statutory forms first. If you have any real assets or any complicated issues, you really do need to talk to an attorney at some point, but get that started and then work with an attorney to make sure you have a really good plan that addresses everything. I'm going to hammer these three documents: trust or will, power of attorney, advance healthcare directive. Get these done up front. again, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. Communicating, talking with family. And if you see someone who's not a family member, you see worry issues with this, talk to them about it. And then if you need to, there is APS, there are other outside services available. But from my perspective and what I do and my goal is to educate families and help them head this off ahead of time whenever we can. And so the sooner you get started on planning, you know, if you see this issue with mom and dad, well, hey, it's a great excuse for you to get your plan into place as well. Because the sooner you start that process, the more you're thinking about this. You know, I have clients who our firms work with for like 30 years, and they started when they were young because they were helping out mom and dad. And now they're in a great position. You know, they have a long paper trail, so to speak, of their wishes. They have people in their family they talk to about it. So I think communicate. I give a lot of free webinars. You can find me at facebook.com/MarkGilfix, MarkGilfix.com. And I love to give free webinars. So I give talks about this regularly, no cost. So always happy to answer questions for people, but you know, communicate, get these documents into place ahead of time. It's not easy once you're already stuck in this, in that deep hole of already having lost a lot.
Prescott Cole, we've got about another minute and a half.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, standing on what Mark said, this is the time for adults to have an adult conversation with their adult parents. We come from, you know, the society from way back where you didn't talk about money. Parents didn't want the kids to know what's going on. They just kept that as a separate thing. You can't do that anymore. You know, there's just too much information out there. People don't have the privacy that they used to have. Things are online, but you have to get the family together. There has to be some transparency. It's only fair for the parents to open up to their children and to say, great, I respect you as an elder. We're going to work this out together. I need your help because, you know, they need your help. We all need to be part of us community. Families need to open up. There needs to be transparency because there's going to be slips. And when people are slipping today, they lose. And some people lose absolutely everything. It's not uncommon for us to hear that somebody has transferred $40,000 off to God knows where. It's time for the families to get together. It's time to open up and to be part of a community.
Josh Borger, 10 seconds.
On behalf of your legal rights, I wanted to wish you, Jeff Hayden, our favorite elder, a happy birthday.
No one is supposed to know about that. Thank you.
Wow, 27.
If anybody out there believes it, don't. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. Tonight, we've been talking about recognizing and preventing financial elder abuse. Our guests tonight have been Deputy San Mateo County District Attorney Deshaun Mata, Gilfix and LaPole Associates partner Mark Gilfix, and courtesy of the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, Prescott Cole. Next week, we bring you Lawyers and Social Change at our usual time at 6 o'clock. Our show tonight has been produced by Josh Borger and yours truly. Once again, a thank you to each of our guests, and especially thanks to all of you for joining us. For Josh Borger and at the controls, D Minor, I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Your Legal Rights here on KALW 91.7 FM. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in the San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For more information, you can call 415-989-1616 or you can visit sfbar.org.